I don't know. What's up, guys? We're here. We're back with our special series. We're trying to cover these episodes for you guys in a pretty quick manner.
Have no choice. I mean, Netflix just put them all out at once. Just like,
yeah. Here well, you go. I read up on it. They're actually doing it in two segments. There's going to be 12 episodes.
I know. It's just the first volume.
The
first season is going to be 12, but they just put out 6.
What do you think the next? Yeah. Maybe aliens or UFOs in the next one?
I don't know.
There was a UFO one.
What if the next series is just nothing but treasure and lost loves?
Yeah, I was going to say it's going to be lost loves. No. Nothing but lost loves.
I hope for some ghosts.
I'm hoping for some paranormal.
The alien one they gave us in this first volume was
good.
Very good.
It was so good.
And I can't wait to get to that.
Do you think they're going to pull out a modern version of that sad harmonica?
I don't think they're going to do Lost Loves, like true crime. I don't know. That's not unless there's like murder involved, and I highly doubt it. Like, yeah, I mean, these are hopefully, I pray to the sweet spirit of Robert Stack.
You know what though? After seeing the first 6, I kind of wouldn't mind to see how their spin on a Lost Loves would be.
Oh, they would probably breathe life into it to where you'd be like, let's solve this.
Very poignant, and we'd be kind of invested.
It'd be like a fucking Lifetime special. I don't, whatever.
These were great, just very perfectly curated stories. Don't you feel?
Oh yeah,
I loved it. I loved so far. I binged all of them.
Yeah, I've watched them all. They're all really intriguing.
Oh, they're so good. They're all good. I can't wait to get to.
I'm trying to savor it.
And today we're talking about 13 Minutes, which is the second episode of the first volume of Netflix's Unsolved Mysteries. This story takes place in April of 2004 in Cummings, Georgia. This is a story of Patrice Endress. But mainly it's the story of her son, Pistol Black. Yeah, that's right. You heard that name right. And how he dealt with his mom's disappearance. So Pistol, who's now 30, was 15 years old when his mom died. He was a sophomore in high school, about to turn 16.
Not died. Disappeared.
Disappeared. Sorry. Okay. Maybe I jumped the gun, but I'm sure you've seen the episode already. Whatever. So he remembers that specific day of waking up to his mom on the treadmill like he always did. And they got in a little argument because he wanted to go to school early and flirt with his girlfriend. But nothing out of the ordinary. So Patrice takes Pistol to school and says, I'll see you later. And it's pretty normal until, he gets called out of class. And then, when he goes to the principal's or to the administrative office, they ask him if he knows where his mom is, if he's talked to her, and he's very confused, says no. And they ask if he can call her. So he tries calling her and gets no answer from her cell phone and, starts to get a little bit worried. To paint a better picture of how this family was, is Patrice was married. We'll get into Rob later. He was married, so Pistol had a stepdad. But Pistol and Patrice, by all accounts, were very, very close. She was at all the PTA meetings, and she was quite involved with his life.
Yeah, one of the things that I remember from the episode was that he said that Christmas time was pretty – like near and dear to them, and she made it kind of all about them.
Yeah, like and, them too. She was a sweet lady. The whole town loved her. She was a passionate hairstylist.
And the salon she worked at was, I guess she owned it, right? Tamers Trim and Tan.
So it was a one-stop shop. And they do talk a little bit about how she worked her way up from, having her own chair to having her own place. So now let's talk about her husband, Rob Endress. He's the guy, he was 20 years older than her. He was 50 when they met. She was 30. Yeah, that's a already little weird. Creepy. I guess at that age it's less weird, but I don't know. So, and the reason they met is because he walked in for a haircut and he just decided that he was in love. He was super friendly and super nice. One of her friends, Anne McDowd, who is this lady, with terrible hair. She looks like she has emo hair from boy emo hair from 2006.
Yeah.
I have a theory about this episode, and it might be, it's not, I wouldn't say offensive. It's just kind of a dark joke. The, all of her friends and family really needed her because they all have terrible hairstyles. There's the two friends, the one with like the kind of short, like emo spiky in the back cut. And then there's the other friend, yeah, who has like a kind of like a fashion mullet. Like it's feathered. It looks very 90s. That one friend, the one I call, or maybe that's, maybe that was her sister. I think it was her sister, the one I'm talking about, but she had bad hair too. Well,
I don't know any, everybody, but yeah, everybody that they talk to. Yeah. And this is current. This is current day. Like those people should not.
Pistol is bald. He shaves his head now, but he says that his mom also would experiment and do different hairstyles like every week when he was a kid and she would want to try something new.
Oh yeah. He was like, oh yeah, he was like, it almost seemed like every other week he had a different color or a different hairstyle.
That's cool.
Or a mohawk.
It kind of reminds me of me when I was in middle school. I used to have that hair like that.
Oh, I remember when I had hair like that in high school and I was always going to the office.
Because it was a distraction?
I don't know. They had something against like unnatural colors. So
yeah, because they said it was a distraction. It was dumb.
So Anne McDowd, the one with the fun emo hair, she like hung out every day. She walked in for a haircut and became fast friends. She said that they used the salon sort of as like it was their little clubhouse. She stopped on in on her way to work.
And the she shed, if you will.
The she shed, yeah. And she recalls even her asking if she would visit the next day, and Anne McDowd saying, "Of course, Patrice, I'll see you tomorrow." But the next day, when some client showed up, she was missing. And that's what prompted the school to call Pistol out and see if they could find her. Because when the cops heard that Patrice was just missing from her salon, they were immediately freaked out. They were like, they immediately knew something was up. She was.
Yeah, because it wasn't like her.
Yeah. Especially just to leave the salon completely open with, appointments and stuff. So when the police respond, they notice a couple odd things. There is cash missing from the register. Like there was her like microwave lunch that was set out like it was about to be heated up or eaten or something. And, it didn't look like a crime scene at all. Also, the car was oddly parked kind of in front, like covering a couple of the parking spots. And when she usually parked on the side, so she could leave the parking lot open for customers. And that was pretty weird.
And they also, I think they noted that the car usually she backs up, right?
Yeah, and parks on the side so she can leave it all empty for everybody. So,
but the car was the other way around.
Yeah.
It was pulled up somewhat adjacent to the front, almost as if she had pulled it out of the parking spot to give a possible customer like a jump start, is how they described the vehicle was parked. It was as if she had pulled up to give someone a jump start. Oh, sorry. It just popped into my head. Didn't they also say that they found like her purse was next to the register, but they found the keys inside of her car or something like that, or inside the Suburban?
Maybe that would make sense if she was jumping, giving somebody a jump.
I didn't remember the keys.
So they take Pistol to the salon to have a look around, and when they tell him his mom's missing, he breaks down in disbelief, and he doesn't believe that she's gone. You know, he's like, "Oh, she'll be right back," and it's just not. It's just shocking. So Rob Endress, the husband, when he finds out that she's missing, he says he's not even immediately jumping to conclusions. He's like, "Oh, you know, maybe it's a mistake, and you know, she just, you know," like he wasn't immediately thinking it was something terrible and bad. Until he's asked to go down to the station for an interview, and then he realizes, "Oh shit, like I might be one of the suspects." But he says, "You know, I have a degree in criminology. I get it. You know, he understands." Sorry. I don't think I mentioned the make of her car. It was a Chevy Tahoe. So like an SUV. And, like we said, it was parked in front, and the police bust out helicopters, and, they commence a chaotic search. Is how they describe it in the episode, and they don't find a thing. They don't find any evidence of her missing, so they just kind of continue to assume that maybe she just left town with somebody or she wasn't in immediate danger. But her friends and family are just like, she never in a million years would have ditched Pistol. She never would have left that kid. She loved that kid.
Yeah, that was her everything.
Pistol does mention 2 weeks prior, like in a passing conversation, his mom just asked like, what would you do if I, you know, something happened to me?
And, that was very cryptic.
Yeah.
Where would you go if something was to happen?
Yeah, but at the same time, like, I don't know. I feel like that's a pretty fair question to ask a kid.
Especially if you're in a relationship with an abuser and you're about to ask for a divorce.
Yeah. That's interesting. And she, but he, Pistol said he thought nothing of it at the time. So the cops start to break down Patrice's timeline, and it starts with Pam Shepard, who was the first person to get her hair cut that day at 8:50. Pam said she seemed distractive and not very attentive. Who knows if that means anything. So 11:05, she leaves. 11:10, Paul Cantor arrives for his haircut. He leaves quickly after 11:27. And then at 11:37, a customer calls to change her appointment. She says the conversation is short, which is very – no, she says that Patrice is short with her, like very, you know, just like fast, which is very – which isn't normal for her. So – and then at 11:50, someone else calls with no answer. So between 11:37 and 11:50, that's the 13 minutes where they think something awful happened or something mysterious or whatever it is, something they just can't figure out.
Right, because the last time that really confirmed was the 11:37 call.
Okay, so let's talk about the two witnesses that drove by and saw him. One talks to the screen. Right. The other is like their story is kind of like told by one of the investigators.
Yeah, and these are two separate witnesses. Yeah. They don't know each other.
The first lady said she saw Patrice giving a jump to a Chevy Lumina with Georgia plates on it. And she, I'm sure she knew Patrice too, because she was like, I noticed because the car is usually parked on the side, so it was in the front. And she said she saw two ladies in front of the Lumina, one which matches Patrice's description, and another one was short and older with shoulder-length hair. And that's pretty weird, but because the other witness says that it was a man, a shorter man with shoulder length hair, which is kind of weird for 2006.
Yeah. Also a different type of vehicle. They said either a Ford Taurus or.
There's three cars that they thought it might possibly be, which was, yeah, Chevy Lumina, Ford Taurus, and a Malibu, which is also a Chevy.
Malibu. And all blue.
They're all.
They both.
Yeah,
both witnesses like said grayish, the car was for sure blue.
Like sedans, early thousand sedans.
Although the second witness also said that the older gentleman that they did see looked like they were either pushing her or as if they were being helped back up as if someone had fallen.
Yeah, she said something looked like there was a struggle. Off. They don't know if somebody was helping somebody or somebody was hurting somebody. But she says she regrets to this day not stopping.
Yeah.
She said she's cried herself to sleep about it. It's terrible.
And then I remember she was kind of the one witness that they do interview. I remember she kind of says that she does get upset with herself because she thought that the investigators told her, you very well may be the last person to see her alive. And she remembers thinking like, oh my gosh, like why didn't I do something?
Yeah, it's scary. So Pistol tells us after this, he's 16. He has to grow up super fast after that. He explains that night of just walking through the woods for hours, calling his mom's name.
Oh, man.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah. At 15?
Yeah. Another interesting thing that the documentary does is they show him at his childhood home.
The
house he grew up in. He's sitting in his old bedroom, and it's like clearly like a younger kid's bedroom.
It now belongs to Landon. Landon charged $286 per hour to shoot on that location.
Are you for real? Or you
just made I don't know. I think the name's – I couldn't quite make the name, but I thought I was like –
Dan's been spending too much time in the Reddit weeds.
Actually, today it was Discord.
Discord.
It's D-I-S-Q-U-E. Or something like that.
Oh, never mind.
No.
Discord's for like gaming, but it's forums about anything now. So those shots of him in his old house are pretty powerful. And they show him sitting on the steps, and then they show a picture of his mom, and that's when he talks about how special his Christmas were. They show a picture of their last Christmas there, and she's sitting on steps covered in snow.
Yeah. And he says that was the day before his mother disappeared was the last day he slept in that house.
Yeah, because bitch-ass Rob wouldn't let him in.
Oh, what a dick.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about, soon. Speaking of perfect, let's talk about evil Rob now. We're talking about how, so, you know, they married when they were, you know, 50 and 30 respectively, and all seemed good at first. I think he was about Pistol was about 8 or 9 when they got married. And at first they were super happy. And Rob even tried to be a stepdad for a couple of years. He really tried and, you know, went to his sports games. And then he just became a fucking dick. Like he explains, like, that he would just walk by the room and say really snide, mean things to this child, essentially, this kid.
Or would mumble shit as he walked by, just like, this worthless piece of shit is just fucking eating all my goddamn fucking food.
Well, he gives no examples. Like, we don't know what he's saying. He gives no examples. I mean, Pistol.
I'm using artistic license to describe what a shitty dad would say when you passive aggressively walk by your stepson's room. Sorry.
I buy it.
Pistol also says that his friends heard this, like, constant berating, like, all the time. And this is like, you know,
hey, Pistol, your stepdad's a dick.
Yeah, this is like verbal abuse. He's like, I had to put up with this for years. And he seems, yeah, like it really, like, kind of impacted him.
Hey, Timmy, can we hang at your house this week? Pistol's dad's kind of a prick. He fucking sucks.
Yeah, no shit.
All of Patrice's friends say that he was super jealous, even of his relationships with the friends. And, of course, super jealous of Pistol. Because she just loved Pistol. And Pistol says whenever they got in a fight and it was about him, she would never back down. She loved her kid.
How dare her be a good mom?
Right? So he was just a fucking jealous, possessive dick. Like, one of the friends explains, like, he just wanted her all for himself.
And this isn't even the worst part about this guy. We haven't even got to the worst part about
this guy. Rob, he like, in the next talking head, after three people are like, he was jealous and possessive and nuts, he says that Pistol was jealous and didn't get that they were intimate. And it's like, dude, he was like 8 or 9. Like, by the time he's 15, you're like established. Like, even if he likes you or doesn't like you.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be jealous of a romantic partner. I don't know. That just didn't make sense to me. He even says, for lack of a better word, he was jealous. Pistol didn't understand.
It sounds like he was making excuses for his behavior and, like, justifying the way he was.
So she had apparently mentioned divorce in passing to Pistol, or he had overheard her with her talking to her friends. And, of course, Rob denies knowing anything about this. But the day after she goes missing, Rob changes all the locks and won't let this 15-year-old kid into his own fucking house. Not even to get his stuff.
Dude, and, what a prick.
And what was his reasoning for changing the locks?
Well, he's
out of precaution? Precaution for what? She's gone missing.
Yeah. And he says that he didn't like Pistol.
Yeah.
How are you going to explain that to your wife, like, when she comes back because she went missing for a day or two? Like, come back, like, hi, honey, I'm so glad you're safe and healthy and back. By the way, I kicked your son out and changed all the locks.
Yeah. It's such a – he's like, why didn't you want Pistol? And he said, like you said, Eli, I didn't like him. A child. He's like, child whose mother just went missing. I didn't like him. I just didn't like him.
The locks.
Like, I don't care if Pistol is 10 times more of a teenage prick than they present in the episode. He's a fucking child who has a child who has a mom who went missing. I don't care if he's like juvenile delinquent, you know, like fucking give him a hug.
Dude, I know.
And then
be there together.
And why would you change the locks instantly? Like, what if she went missing because, like, you know, there was an emergency and, like, she ran somewhere?
Yeah,
and she needed to come back home.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah, that's super suspicious. Like, what is going to come on and finish? The person's going to come and finish off the rest of the family? I mean, yeah. Because he says, for obvious reasons, I changed the locks. And I just didn't like him. That's like, I just want to punch that old bitch. God.
Sorry, my kids are acting up.
You weren't.
Who needs a spanking?
You weren't talking, so none of that. It'll all be gone.
Oh, did I miss the whole tantrum? I accidentally unplugged myself.
A little deception at the beginning of the story, because even though I guess Pistol's dad is a little bit less than ideal, he did have a dad who immediately took him in, and apparently still had a decent relationship with the mom.
Right. At least like they were best friends, it said.
At least it's presented by Pistol, yeah. But he did say his dad, it wasn't easy because his dad went into a severe depression for losing his best friend. So, you know, it's just some more of the shittiness that went on with this story. So even after all this shit, Pistol thought that he said every morning he thought that the day would come where his mom just came back and everything went back to normal. All right. So let's talk about some of the suspects that we have that they go through in the episode.
Rob.
Let's talk about Gary Mitchell Hilton, who I don't know. None of the suspects are awful. Gary Mitchell Hilton.
Can I just say, I never like the serial killer angle, like some random serial killer.
I don't know. For this one, you don't like it? Or just ever?
I still don't. I never like
it. Okay, let's talk about Gary Mitchell Hilton. Because this guy is some fucking serial killer jackass who they show videos of him being interrogated, and he keeps talking about his artistic sense and how he's an artist and a sociopath, and that's how he goes about murdering and stuff.
So what I tried to do with this victim here is I wanted to fillet the breastbone from the chest plate. And just really exhibit, you know, just the flesh of my artwork.
Ew, gross.
Put it in the smoker.
It's kind of like how he talked. He was just like, everything was art as an artist and a psychopath.
We get it. You're different.
That's why we're putting you in an 8x6 room for the rest of your life.
I just thought it was funny how he said, like, oh, you know, with my artistic sense. And my sociopathy. So this piece of shit abducted a young woman named Meredith Emerson and her dog, kept him alive for a couple of days, and then brutally murdered her. And he was known to be in that area. Like, a sheriff had actually, like, pulled him over in that exact area. He would also do these shitty little cons for money. And he said he liked to go to hair salons and try to con people in the afternoon. Said it was his favorite time of day. During lunch. Oh, yeah,
during lunch.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, who knows? I mean, they say they're not going to rule him out, but they have no evidence. I mean, they have no evidence against anybody, so. Suspect two, Jerry Jones, was a guy who was arrested in Mobile, Alabama, for murdering a woman, and he confessed to murdering 6 to 8 others. So this guy is considered a serial killer.
You're not talking about Jerry Jones of the Dallas Cowboys?
No, damn. This is Jerome. Or Jeremy, I thought. Jeremy Jones.
Is it?
I thought it was Jerry Jones.
I don't know. Oh, for the Cowboys? I don't know about the fucking Cowboys. Anyway, this scumbag rapist murderer, he confessed to 6 to 8 murders. Who knows how many they actually confirmed, because in this they say that he was arrested for murdering one woman. So he talks about how he needed to tell them about some hairdresser in Georgia. And he tells this whole story about how he pretended to need a jump, and then he got her with a knife and made her go into his car. And I don't know, that seems like it possibly could have been what that lady saw. Yeah. It looked like he was helping her. Like, it looked like he was helping her up or pushing this old lady down. Or, I mean, because that guy was a little dude.
They could have asked him if he had rocker hair. Did you have rocker hair?
But, I mean, did you see that guy? He was short. He was little. He probably was shorter than Patrice.
We also didn't mention that when 2 years later they found her remains.
Well, yeah, I mean,
we completely
We're getting there. We're talking about suspects, and then we're going to talk about the discovery.
So, but this guy also says that he dumped her body in Sweetwater Creek. And like we are going to get to, that's not where they found her body. But also, he did say in the interview, he talks about how when he's on heroin, he's like he's like a monster. So, I mean, if you kill that many girls, you might mix up where you dump a body.
Yeah, he gets all Heckle and Jekyll on that H.
Yeah, he said he'd get all Heckle and Jekyll. I'm like, you mean Jekyll and Hyde?
Jekyll and Hyde?
I mean, I don't expect him to have like a grasp of like horror literature and fucking plays and stuff. But
I thought that same thing. I was like, who's Heckle and Jekyll?
Yeah.
You know, when you get hopped up on that H, you just become all Heckle and Jekyllish.
Yeah, it's like, I think what you meant is you become a...
No, I know what I meant.
I become Heckle and Jekyll.
I'm Heckle and Jekyll. It's two guys in one, and we're wild. We're wild. We like to party.
I read
Heckle and Jekyll is a real thing. It's a post-war animated cartoon series.
Oh, it's like Johnny Chimpo.
It's the ones, the two, they're like birds. They're crows.
Are they completely different?
No, they look the same.
Do they do a bunch of heroin and murder people?
Yeah, they do, actually.
Oh, so maybe he was right.
I think he just they mixed up exactly a reference. He meant Jekyll and Hyde, but he said Heckle
totally
and Jekyll.
He totally mixed up a reference. Look, there we go. That's Heckle and Jekyll.
So they let him draw like a little picture of like how the car, how he parked the car and how he got in there. And it matched pretty good. I don't know if this is like a fuck. What's that one serial killer? The confession killer. I don't know if it's like one of those things where cops might've like sprinkled the idea of this lady's death into his brain. And he just kind of said he did it because he wanted attention. Again, he knew enough about details about it. That could be a possibility. But yeah, that's pretty specific. He drew a picture of how her car was parked in front of the salon and everything. But then he recants his confession years later. So
he recanted once they found the body behind. Where did they find the body, actually?
They found it at Lebanon Baptist Church, which was established in 1941. They found it on December 6th of 2005, which is 20 months and exactly 600 days after she went missing.
Oh, to the yeah.
How'd they find it? There was a biscuit was involved, wasn't it?
A biscuit was involved. Yes,
a biscuit was involved.
This man, who was a volunteer building the fellowship hall, his parents actually started the church, so he's cool. Didn't get his name, but I know that information about him. Him and his buddy were like taking a break. His friend brought him a biscuit, and they were sitting back there eating a biscuit.
Breakfast biscuit.
And he saw buzzards circling. And these buzzards, he was like, after I finish my biscuit, I'm going to go down there and see what that is. He's great. His accent is fucking phenomenal. And I'm not doing it justice. But so, yeah, he goes down there. They find the deer. And then his buddy's looking behind him. And he's like, hey, what's that? And they turn around. Sure enough, a human skull. And then he picked it up and kissed it. Wait, sorry. No. Not him. He didn't
We're
do that.
Getting there. We're getting to that point. If you had picked up skull and kissed it on your bingo card today, you are a winner.
Bingo.
Okay. So they find
it, he says.
So they find this skull back there. And so he threw up his honey butter chicken biscuit, or he threw up his sausage biscuit with egg. You think he was just eating one dry biscuit by itself?
Was it biscuit and gravy?
What if it was like a dog biscuit?
That's so weird the way he said that. Was it biscuit and gravy?
What if it was a dog biscuit?
No, was it biscuit sausage biscuit?
It was biscuit
gravy.
Was it gravy.
Honey butter chicken biscuit?
Technically, it is one biscuit. They split the biscuit in half.
It is. But is it just like a dry biscuit with nothing in it? That's what I was wondering.
What's in said biscuit?
I mean, I guess if it's like a cheddar enough, biscuit from like a regular biscuit, dry out of the oven.
What if it was like a cheddar biscuit from Red Lobster?
Oh man, there's so many different kinds. I mean, if we're going to England across the pond with this, everything's a biscuit to those motherfuckers.
Everything's a biscuit.
Any cookie, it's all fucking biscuits.
A cracker? Does it have salt on it?
It's all motherfucking biscuits. I digress.
Maybe it was a limp biscuit.
Oh, do you think that they jizzed in a biscuit? And isn't that the thing? Isn't that what limp biscuit is?
Yeah,
it's so Google gross.
It. I won't go more. Into
a limp biscuit
it.
Is yeah, where no. people circle.
No. We won't. We'll let them Google.
Yeah, Google it. Google it. Yeah, it's fine. Let's get back to it.
Be sure to look up. Fuck, not banned. Don't. If it's banned, you don't want no interest in that.
Unless it's one of the movies Fred Durst directed, because he's a great movie director.
Oddly enough,
not really. He's fine. I mean, he's not the worst.
David's shaking his head no.
So Pistol gets called out of class, and he goes to the principal's office. His dad's there. And his dad.
This poor guy, man. He keeps getting called out of class. Dude.
And his dad tells him that.
It's okay. He said it was common.
His dad. Oh, yeah.
Because he says he does say. By this time he was getting into fights and stuff.
Yeah, by this time he was a bit of a troubled kid because he was fucking berated and fucking verbally abused. You know, just slowly broken down by this fucking cunt named Rob.
Ooh, that should be the name of the episode, a cunt named Rob.
So anyway, his dad tells him that they found mom, and he's like, oh, great. And then, of course, you know, it's her remains. And then
he's like, no,
his dad's like, no, it's not like that, son. They found her remains. And he's like, oh,
Lebanon church where they found her body. Well, around where they found her body was 6 miles from her salon. And when they found the skull, they conducted a heavy search of the area. The guy was explaining it was all the way from here to the ravine, which I assume is a big area. I don't know what the fucking ravine is. But he said that they had to move like all the leaves aside and to where they could just see bare dirt. So if there was anything embedded in the dirt that they could find it. And they didn't. The only evidence they found was pretty much all of her bones. The investigators were noting that that was some pretty insane terrain to be carrying a body. But they don't count out the idea that she walked there herself, you know? They don't really know. There's no evidence of her being dragged, nothing like that. The third suspect goes without saying. And Pistol, it's what Pistol believes, that his mom wanting to get a divorce from Rob definitely had something to do with her murder. And her friends seem to agree.
Yeah.
So we don't know. I mean, does Pistol say that he murdered her? Not really. He says that he thinks her getting a divorce had something to do with it. So, I mean,
yeah, he thinks that he's involved. He politely somehow. Said he it necessarily.
All of her friends seem to generally agree.
I believe that his quote was, "I think Rob had something to do with my mother's murder."
Yeah. I guess the documentarian straight up asks Rob, like, "Did you kill her?" And then he says he has no comment for people to think that he killed him because he's like, I have an alibi. He says, I have no comment. And then he goes on for like a couple of sentences explaining why he didn't do it and how he couldn't have done it. So I think he did have a comment.
And then they did a cutaway or was he the one that said like the detectives did a timeline as well to verify?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, well, yeah, the cops, like he got gas and they have his receipt and then he went into work turnstile wise. But the cops said that he's not ruling out a murder for hire, even though it seems improbable.
Well, here's the thing. Like, the receipt doesn't prove anything because anyone could have given him a receipt.
Yeah, for gas.
For gas at that time. Or he could have, you know.
But he can't get into work. It's 2006, you know. There's probably cameras, too. We're not thinking 1993 anymore.
Yeah, that's also true.
We're thinking newer terms.
What is the possibility, like, not a murder for hire, but because, you know, she supposedly threatened to get a divorce, and he said himself that, you know, that she was his everything and that, like, you know, he would do anything to keep her. Who's to say that he didn't hire someone to kidnap her and he, you know...
I don't know. I think he loved her.
I mean, he changed the locks in the house. Did the cops ever, you know, check out the house after he changed the locks? Were there any visits?
I think he loved her. I don't think he would have done it himself, honestly. I mean, if he had something to do with it, I think the murder for hire is a little more.
I mean, believable. he even said, like, what if someone kidnapped her and, you know, kept her as a toy?
Oh, that's such another fucking nightmarish thing that he says.
Is he saying that because maybe that's what he did? Change the locks, mm-hmm. Kick her son out, keep her in the basement for 6 months.
He's first 20 minutes of Law and Order. He's not the killer. I don't think. I don't know. I think he's a fucking creep, and we're not done talking about how creepy he is. Yeah, but still.
Dun, dun.
So, yeah, there are sort of timestamps, and he can prove his whereabouts, you know, what he was doing that day. And with the timeline, like, yeah. Investigators, murder for hire, improbable, but who knows? Because they don't have any evidence. They don't have any evidence that he even knew that she was planning on divorcing him. Yeah. when he says that, it's so, I don't know, it's just jarring. He's like, this is gonna sound bad, but maybe somebody used her as a toy. Just like, God. So what happened in those fucking 13 minutes? Was it a Taurus, a Malibu, a Lumina?
Or was it a Rob?
The car that was seen in the middle of those 13 minutes is like the key to this case, you know?
Yeah, that blue. And then they said, investigators are saying, if you know somebody with a blue car at that time, that maybe after the next couple of days, they were acting weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let us know.
They also discuss how there's specifics of this case that they're not willing to discuss because it's something called guilty knowledge information. And I guess I know of this, but I didn't know that there was like a term for it. You know, they yeah, do it, you either. Know, from like cop shows and stuff like that, or detective shows.
They want to make sure that the killer, it's really the killer. So they keep certain details.
I mean, and just to run that down, if you missed it, it's just basically like, certain things about the murder that only the murderer would know. So they don't get false confessions.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get this creepy kind of prologue about where the funeral director is like interviewed about how like the cremation process of Patrice went.
It was a lot like Hamlet when Hamlet picks up his father's skull.
Yeah. Okay. So, but the guy,
a little more creepy.
The funeral guy is like very like prim and proper. And then we have Rob on the other side explaining it. And what he basically says is, when they recovered, the cops say they recovered all but like a couple of her bones. Like they recovered most of her bones. They had them lay her out as best they could as like a skeleton. And then the funeral says, and then we let Mr. Rob in so he could have his time with Miss Patrice. And then he left. And then so fucking weird.
No, then he asked him to leave the room for some privacy. Where he picked up her skull and walked around the room and pondered.
Yeah, he said he carried it. And then what did he do with it?
He kissed it.
Rob, he said he picked it up and he carried it around for a while. And he kissed it goodbye. He put it down and kissed it goodbye. And then they gave him the cremains.
The cremains?
Creepy. That's what they're called.
They're called cremains? They're called
cremains. Yeah.
I just thought it was ashes, you know, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Oh, no. Learn something new every day. What do you know?
And then that's the creepy doesn't end there, people.
No.
This goes even further.
Before we move on to that part, I want to say that he does say, and that's the last time I saw her even remotely intact. And I was like, wait, back up. That's what you consider the last time seeing her? Carrying around her skull and giving it a little kiss.
Yeah.
La da da dee, la da da da. Like he's dancing around with the skull.
But notice how he said in remotely intact. Yeah. Because the time prior to that, he saw her, he was chopping her up in the woods.
Okay, come on. Conjecture.
Innocent until proven guilty.
Objection, conjecture. So the last of his creep factor is the fact that, when he got the box of her remains back, he fucking slept with them?
Yes.
Like, with the box.
But did he really do that? Box. Because he pulls it out of a dusty-ass closet when he shows the people for Netflix.
Well, he said it first. At first, he slept with the box. And it was still, like, it's like a wooden box, but it's also in, like, a cardboard box.
So a cardboard box.
He's like, look how...
He says...
Yeah.
He said he never takes it out. He slept with it in the cardboard box. So... He opens it in the episode. He cuts the box, and there's a nice wooden box inside. And inside of that, there's a bag of ashes.
Yeah, and that's the cremains of her bones.
This guy couldn't get an urn?
He said it's the first time he's ever pulled it out and looked at it.
There is like an urn. Well, not an urn. Yeah, okay, it's not an urn. There's a wooden box. So he said he slept with the box before. Like, and he said it – he said that –
What's in those boxes?
He said I would grab it, and I would cuddle with it, and it reminded me of good times.
She was my teddy bear, so I hugged it like a teddy bear.
She was my toy. I mean, she was my teddy bear.
See, exactly. You're thinking the same thing.
I mean, people mourn different ways, but that's so fucking weird.
I don't know. And then
he also says this is something he doesn't admit to people, and he's telling the fucking world. Internationally. It's not just...
I don't think he realizes how many people watch Netflix.
Oh, so this is just a little program on PBS, right?
No.
So even if it's not Rob Endress, he sure is a fucking weirdie.
Yeah, he's super weird.
But yeah, I mean, people do grieve differently. And I think my gut is saying that if he did it, it's a murder for hire. But I kind of believe in that little creepy dude who recanted his story.
You think it was him?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
Rob has... potential motive if he did know about the divorce, especially because he was controlling. But the probability of fucking Senor Heroin doing it. I think that is probable. I think that's
it's pretty probable.
That's highly probable, actually.
I think it's improbable. I mean, sure. Okay. What I also think is probable is that, sure, maybe Rob never heard the word divorce come out of her mouth, but I think it's also pretty probable that he fucking got what was coming because he fucking sucked, you know? Like, he probably did. Even if she never actually said it to him, he probably knew all the shit was building to. So he might have done something.
I don't know. He's a creep. It doesn't make him a killer.
He doesn't make himself look great in this episode. I'll tell you that.
Not at all.
He just says he doesn't. He's so heartless when it comes to Pistol. And Pistol in this episode talks about how sad he is that he doesn't even have her remains. And then it cuts back to Rob, who says, "I'm still protective of Patrice, and especially from Pistol."
That's what makes me so angry, because it's like, that's her son.
He's such an old fucking little bitch. I hate him, dude. Ugh, he sucks.
Me too.
Yeah. Even if he didn't kill her, he's still a fucking piece of shit.
Yeah, he's a terrible person.
Come at me, Rob. You were on Reddit while we were watching.
Yeah, I was. And basically, a lot of the consensus of people in Reddit think that if he didn't do it, there was a good likelihood that he probably hired someone to kidnap her. And the
kidnapping. Oh, yeah, that guy didn't do it. That guy doesn't have a... Yeah, that guy couldn't do it.
The consensus in Reddit seems, from what I've been reading in the 200 comments that are up so far, is that he is involved in some sense. And like, a lot of people speculate that maybe that he hired someone to kidnap her, and just like the kidnapping went sour and the kidnapper killed her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is what seems to be the consensus.
Mm.
That seems probable.
You know something else I want to mention?
Some people also think that he kidnapped or hired someone to kidnap her and then kept her in the house as a sex slave because he suggested it and then also changed the locks.
Yeah, but that's
Epstein style.
That's some fan fiction. People are just like, you know, they're painting the picture with the information they have, you know. Like I always go back to the fucking, you know, Beatles record cover.
That's why you do the detective thing, you know. I work off facts, not theories.
Yeah, yeah. Something I want to mention aside from this case is I saw somebody actually wrote an article about that Reddit theory that we mentioned on our episode. So I thought it was pretty cool. How somebody found similarities to that movie, The Game, and Ray Rivera jumping off the roof to get his prize or whatever.
Yeah.
There was like an article, somebody like, I don't know if you, I Googled Ray Rivera and one of the articles that came up was like some Reddit user found like some interesting things, you know, in the way Ray Rivera died versus his letter.
The movie, The Game.
Yeah. Hmm. And it's The Game stuff. So I thought that was kind of cool.
That is cool.
People are crowdsourcing. It's fucking Netflix. It's really the closest thing to everybody watching.
Oh, man. It's pretty exciting. It feels so good, man. It feels very fresh. Which is why we had to record again soon.
Yeah.
So if you hear these out as quickly as possible.
Yeah. If you're hearing Eli's cute kids in the background, we're trying to get these to you as quick as possible. So enjoy the screaming. Yeah,
we didn't
want to
wait.
Yeah.
I couldn't wait for them to just, those little bastards to be in bed.
I'm trying to think of some other things I want to add about 13 Minutes, the Patrice Endress case. But I mean, this one, yeah, it's a solid mystery. It's a solid mystery. Some of them aren't. I mean, like the last case, there's like, it's just, the last case is interesting. It's like, it's a mystery of why some person is not in jail. That's a mystery.
These people are.
But we'll get to it. Yeah.
So
effed. So then the next one we're covering is going to be, it's the French one, right? It's the counts.
Yeah.
So
les incompétents. Or as the French.
What is that from?
Les incompétents. That's from Home Alone.
Oh, yes.
Kevin, you know what the French call
les incompétents. Yeah, that's good. As you know, someone on Instagram was like, I'm loving the Unsolved Mysteries. I didn't like the French one.
That was one of my favorites, actually.
I didn't like the French one. And I was like, what? Like, a rich baron who murders his whole family and disappears?
He's a count.
Sorry, a count?
I want to be a count.
Like I don't know if he just didn't like reading subtitles. I was like, dude, that shit, man, was interesting.
And it was great. I loved it. It was one of my favorites.
I love France.
Do you think Netflix did not, because you know how Netflix, I mean, they're everywhere and they have all these shows being produced in foreign countries.
They're stupid not to do international stories on Unsolved Mysteries.
Well, what I was going to say is,
I hope there's
do
more.
Do you think there is a, like an overdubbed version of this in like English or Cantonese?
I hope for not. I was thinking about that.
Kind of like in Dark, how you can like,
oh yeah,
listen to the audio.
I
was thinking
about that. I thought about that. I hope not.
I don't think so. Yeah, but it's so weird watching Dark with, because it's a great German sci-fi show. If you guys like Back to the Future was fucking terrifying. Or
Rain. Ooh.
But you can choose to watch audio in English.
Yeah.
To watch it with the audio in English, and they're like, oh man, what's going on? Oh, this stinks. And then you're just like, oh, it ruins those German actors' performances, but it's really just bad. Weird.
It's close. People. Like the overlaying of the words and the lip syncing is close-ish.
The acting's not good though in the voices. And also,
well, there's that.
The subtitles don't match up with what the English voices are saying, because I feel like they do compromises so the mouths match more. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I feel like you're not even getting a true translation
of the story. but it's also very jarring, and it fucks with you, because you can clearly see these actors aren't American. Just like the way they're dressed and the environment is very European, so you're just like, it's not right.
This doesn't make sense.
I can't wait to cover the one about the Baron, right?
I'm stoked.
Count,
he's a count.
Chocula.
It's good. It's good. It's real good.
Oh, I haven't had Count Chocula.
It's a really interesting story. I'm going to reach out to my French friend. Somebody on Twitter, she said that she lived in France for 7 years and she's always been a true crime fan. She's like, oh yeah, I knew about this story. It's really interesting.
Dan and I, fun fact, took French together in high school, and I can't speak a lick. Dan could maybe say better things than me. So
I don't know. It's been a while. Dan, you only did it for 2 years. I was dumb. I did it for four. I did it for 6 years, 4 years in high school and 2 years middle school.
I did it for two in middle school and two years or 1 year in
high school. None of it stuck.
Oh, terrible.
I've been to France and
I want to go to France. I told Jocelyn.
And if you're not like straight up in the heart of Paris, everybody is pretty nice about speaking to you in English, but if you're in Paris, they're not that nice.
What was that episode? What was that episode?
And if you're in Marseille,
I know what it was. It was Modern Family. It's the episode. It's one of the last episodes. Modern Family.
We saw them. I think I said this on this podcast when I was in France. We saw Sofia Vergara and Joe Manganiello at the Castle of Versailles.
Yeah, I remember.
And I was like, that's like skinny Joe Manganiello. And I was like, oh no, that's him. But if that's him.
That's really him.
If that's him, then who's he standing next to? Oh shit. She's very short. Sophia.
Anyways, that was cool. in the episode, Mitchell dresses, he's dressed very American and everybody's speaking to him as an American because they could tell.
Yeah.
And he goes and buys French clothes.
Yeah, yeah. And then he overdoes friends. It. Yeah. It's kind of true. Like, I would go to a cafe and get like a beer and just like watch the cars go by and look at the river. Cause I was there for like a week and a half and everybody was working and stuff and the kids were at school. It was great. Just people watching in France, whatever. I loved it. And then, I would like go and get a beer and it'd be like, and I'd say, merci. And then they would be like, you're welcome. They know. So that is an accurate
joke. You gotta be a dick.
Yeah.
As you sip your French beer.
Hello. No, it's all hello. Belgian. They all like the French people don't even like French beer.
French beer is terrible.
They all drink Belgian beer.
Fucking piss.
Hello.
But yeah, we can't wait to talk about that. It'll be fun. Thanks for listening to us, guys. I wish I had some more insight about this specific case. Just tragic and interesting.
I hope there's updates. I tried looking for updates already, hoping somebody would already come forward.
I think
it being out already.
I think there's a good chance that we might be getting some updates on these cases. So
that's
another reason why it'll be fun to cover them as quick as possible. All right. Well, we'll be back. I don't know when this is coming out, but there's no like schedule right now. We're just trying to like do these episodes and get and crank them out because, you know,
trying to feed the beast.
Yeah. I mean, you're working normal, right? And yeah, you're working 9 to 5. Dan and I aren't. So we're trying to do this as smoothly as possible because we want you guys to have something productive. We want you guys to have something to listen to after you watch these interesting cases. I wish we had more extra information for you guys today, but
yeah,
not this one.
We have some theories.
Hey, but I've noticed our Facebook's people are starting to engage on our Facebook, which was kind of dead for a little bit.
Yeah.
Instagram's always popping.
We buzz.
I just found out you can't.
Instagram's been really good lately.
Just found out you can't send us messages on Twitter, which we probably have to fix right now, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'll figure that out. But yeah, thanks so much for hanging out and checking us out. And we'll be back to talk about The Count and his sweet, innocent, like beautiful family that was just murdered for who knows what reason. We'll get into it. That one, I feel like there's like probably so much deep diving we can do. Like I kind of want to restart researching it like right after we stop recording. But for every mystery, there's someone somewhere who knows the truth. And if you know who that person, if you know that truth, like go to unsolved.com because the shit's back on. Mm-hmm. This shit is back on. Actually, I mean, they've never really went off, but you know, this shit's back on in a big bad way. And hopefully, I'm pretty sure they'll probably get an uptick in everyone else and people watching the old episodes too, because the classics are amazing. All right, guys, good night. See you soon, and happy true crime. And no, I got.